Hey guys, it's Eric G from Around the House, and I am thrilled to announce that our massive back catalog, nearly 1,900 episodes packed with home improvement tips, DIY hacks, and expert advice, is now available for free. Dive into years of inspiration to tackle on your next project. And just a heads up, some podcast players limit how far back you can go. So if you can't find it all, just head straight over to our website, aroundthehouseonline.com, and listen to every episode there. Don't miss out. Start binging today. And thanks for tuning in to Around the House. Great show ahead today. We're going to have a lot of fun. We talk home improvement here each Saturday from noon to 2. And this is where we take your calls because we want you to be a part of the process. Because when you call in and have a question, you help so many other people. But today, we've got a fun day ahead. We're going to talk tiny homes. Everybody wants to know what a tiny home is, but I want to get your calls. Numbers here in the studio. So write this down. Put it in your phone, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. But I want to introduce our guest here, MJ. We're going to talk tiny homes.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Let's talk about you and your life of tiny homes, because I love this, and I got to come out and visit you this week. I'm super impressed.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about you and your company and how you got into tiny homes. Let's start out with that.
Well, thank you. So in 2014, I was sort of ending a very long stint as a single mom and looking forward to my future and saying, I don't have any money for retirement, so how am I going to live? Mm-hmm. And I ventured across tiny homes. So my first one was finished in 2015. And since then, I've gotten really involved in the industry. And then this great opportunity came along. Someone says, hey, you want to build us a tiny home? And I'm like, not really sure. I said, yeah. What are your requirements? Like, what do you want? Like, what do you need? I wasn't really sure whether or not I wanted to jump in. And they said, you know what? We trust you. Do whatever you want to do. Design it however you want to design it. So I signed up.
And here you are.
And here I am.
I love it. You've got your blog. You've got your company. Let's talk about your blog out there first and then dive into your company as well, because I love stuff on the internet out there, and good informative stuff to me is always fun.
Thanks. Yeah, I think one of the things that's really unique about my blog in particular is that I have been maintaining it since 2014. So in blog land, that's a really long time.
Exactly.
And basically what I do, let me see, this is my fifth tiny house build that we're going to talk about today. So
nice. What
I do is actually blog the entire process from start to finish. So hundreds of photos, tens of thousands of words about plumbing and electrical and why I chose this style of roof or why I chose that door or why I chose those curtains, design mantra. And I'm a female, so I also have a great perspective as far as that goes as well. So
it's cool, because what I think is there's this big question within people. They'll see, you know, on HDTV or wherever, they'll see the tiny home thing, but so many people haven't really got their arms around it and get it yet.
Yeah,
and I think that's kind of the fun part of it.
Yeah, the TV shows have definitely done the industry a huge favor. I mean, when I first started in 2014, like, no one even knew what it was. Reaching out to various suppliers and product suppliers, you really had to explain it. Now we don't have to explain it. So that's the good news. It's really spurred the industry and spurred a lot of interest. The bad news is, however, the TV shows give the impression that it's really easy to do. And in many ways, I can assure you, it's actually way more complicated than building a house on a foundation.
It's twice as hard, because now you're trying to make everything go together, fit on a specific size frame that's going to go down the highway legally.
Exactly.
And make it so it's transportable and not so heavy that you can't move it down the highway.
Right. So architecturally, there's this term where we say our houses have to withstand a hurricane and an earthquake simultaneously. So like a couple of straps here and there ain't going to cut it. I mean, I've got, like, for instance, my first house, 92 bolts actually attaching the subfloor to the frame. So
yeah, this is not just I'm going to build this cute little doghouse on an old trailer thing. This is got to be solid. And I was really impressed out there this week, and we'll talk about this a little later in the show.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. We're going to talk a little bit about this later, but man, when you see, you know, some glass tiles in a shower and things like that, it's not what you would think that would be. There was a lot of very, what I would call, light and delicate pieces of finish work in there. It's something you wouldn't think that you see on many of the tiny homes out there, which are many times more cottagey, big and rustic and super durable feeling. But there are some really nice finished details on this, which I think is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Like I said, it's my fifth build, and I had a lot of bandwidth. So I really went crazy on this one on many, many levels. It's really great. I get to work with the best of the best in Portland. We'll talk more about that. But it's great to just go into a showroom and say, what do you got?
Yeah. So let's talk about tiny homes for a minute. We got a few minutes before we have to go out to break. Tiny homes, let's define them here for a moment. And I know, you know, you see people out there with their little ADUs in their backyard, which are, you know, 600 square feet sitting on a foundation. And then there's tiny homes and tiny houses, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
So typically what we say is anything under 400 square feet. That's kind of like the unofficial line in the sand. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there are the tiny houses on wheels versus tiny house on foundation.
Correct.
So typically tiny houses on foundation do fall under a cottage code or an ADU or something mm-hmm. like that. But 90, 95% of the people out there, when they're talking about tiny houses, are probably talking about tiny houses on wheels.
Correct. Yeah, it's not the little ADU for the mother-in-law back on a foundation. We're talking something that's going to roll up and still do all the same things of it without having to put so much concrete in the ground.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's fun about these is that I was surprised because I've been in my share of them, don't get me wrong, but things are feeling larger in size inside as the design keeps going. It's interesting. It always felt to me early on that I was in a very tiny, like, motorhome coach kind of thing.
Right.
And now, as people are kind of expanding upon the thought process and the design on this, they're really feeling roomy for 400 square feet.
Yeah, the one that you came to see was 204 square feet. And people, even I'm amazed at this point of how much functionality you can fit in there once you really start to be creative about the use of space. I think like any industry, it's an evolution, right? We start and we're like, okay, if I can do this, can I do this? And then we glean ideas off of each other. And of course, Pinterest and television and blogs and, you know, shows like this. For every single person that learns about tiny houses for the first time, it's amazing. You know, everybody gets big wide eyes and then they see what's really possible.
Oh yeah, I look at that just on the what you can do residentially, what you can do commercially. I look at that and go, man, wouldn't that be a great music studio out in the back?
You know,
those are all things that you can do with these things, let alone restaurants or anything else. I mean, there's 100 things you can do with these, you know, from solutions for affordable housing to homeless to, I mean, we could cover just 2 hours of that.
I know.
Which is great.
But what's amazing is for as much as we can do with them, people still haven't figured out what they are. So I hope we have I hope we get to talk a little bit about that.
I want to talk about that as well coming up because the issues you run into with zoning and trying to define what is a tiny house, what is an RV, what is, you know, there's all these different thoughts that people have out there, which seem to be starting to kind of congeal into some, at least a direction where before you had everybody pointing to each other going, no, it's your problem, no, it's your problem, no, it's your problem. And I kind of want to dive into that a little bit more because that's some of the stuff that really causes confusion of what you can do and what you can't do out there.
Yeah, out of all the questions that people ask me in particular about tiny houses, the number one question is, where can I park it? And the number two question is, where do I go to the bathroom?
There you go. Well, when we come back, we're going to be taking all your calls, 877-733-1011, just as soon as Around the House returns. Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. We're having a good time in here talking tiny homes today. Want to get your calls at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. 833-1011. This segment Around the House is brought to you by Western Construction Systems, whether it's foundation repair, earthquake retrofitting, basement waterproofing, or drainage systems. WesternConstructionSystems.com. The integrity of your foundation is their specialty guaranteed. And that is CCB number 94222. Well, you know, every week at this time, you know, I don't know how many more times we're going to be doing this. So we're starting to get to the end of this promotion. So now is going to be the time that we give away 30 seconds outdoor cleaner. This is that 64-inch hose out sprayer that goes on the end of your hose. You can get two stories with this thing. It's super cool. So we're going to go caller number 12. Caller number 12, and that's going to be 2-503-733-4101. Caller 12, 503-733-4101. And Donovan's going to take your call, and we're going to have a good time with those calls coming in, and I'll let you know who the winner is. So caller 12, 503-733-4101. And if you're too shy here to call in and ask a question, go ahead and send an email to ath@kxl.com. Make sure you follow us on iTunes, SoundCloud, whichever way you want to do it. And as well, you can also listen to us on the Alexa device now. You could sit there with Alexa and say, hey, listen to Eric G, Around the House with Eric G on, tune in. That's how that goes. And it will play the last podcast, which will be up after the show ends. Let's jump back here to MJ because we're talking tiny homes. Welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So let's say somebody out there has got their eyeball on a piece of land. They're like, oh, I got this little creekside place and I'm going to build a house.
Or I maybe want one I'm, of those.
See, you got half the battle. You got the piece of property, but now you're trying to debate, do I want a tiny home? Do I want to build a house? Let's talk tiny homes and kind of the thought process of how do you get from point A to point B with that?
Well, I think the first thing you're going to do is you're going to find out, hopefully before you buy that land.
There's the key.
I think so. I think the first thing you're going to do really is find out how generous, shall we say, how liberal or how conservative your local jurisdiction is with building codes and zoning.
That's the thing, because, you know, some places are kind of really on board with it, and other places, depending on where you're in the country, they are kind of against it because they're worried about these little tiny things popping up everywhere. And I've seen across the country, there's just a very wide mix of people putting their arms around it and people that are going, whoa, 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 I don't understand it yet.
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, of course, that's true of regular construction. I mean, sure. Like, for instance, I think the state of Vermont or something, like super, super generous building codes, build what you want. We'll be out there eventually to see if it fall down yet, you know, if it fell down. So, yeah.
That's where all those pictures end up on Pinterest. Because
I know.
I always rail on this in the middle of the show because there's so many, I don't know, I think every picture must come out of Vermont because you see these beautiful, gorgeous freestanding bathtubs with the chandelier overhead that I'm like, every state I've ever worked in will never let that go in. But somehow every one of my design clients has walked in with that picture for their master tub. And I have to explain them, hey, look, that could kill you if you grab that light fixture while you're knee deep in water. So let's stick with codes.
Let's be a little bit more safe. Yeah. But yeah. So, I mean, the difference is people ask all the time, you know, where can I put a tiny house? And the answer really always is, where do you want to? Right. So some people, to me, I think tiny house people are sort of divided into two different categories, right? There are people that are pray to build.
Yep.
And then there are people that build and pray.
Yeah.
Right. So the ones that pray to build, right, they want permission. They want the money. They want permission. Mm-hmm. They want someone to say, here's your land. No problem. Do what you want. That's great. You know,
yeah.
And then there are people like me that are more inclined to ask forgiveness and permission. And I built first and then I just prayed for a place to find it.
Yeah, there you go. And that can be the challenge sometimes with zoning stuff on it, because, you know, some jurisdictions, if I understand this correctly, think of it as you parking your RV.
Yeah, that's
right
true.
There.
Yeah.
And so some building codes don't let you do that in certain areas.
Right. Yeah. So tiny houses on wheels are divided kind of, we'll say really generically, between two different really categories. There's the RVIA, Recreational Vehicle Industry of America, tiny houses. They're built by manufacturers. They have certifications. They have inspections. They have codes that are built to what's called RV standards.
Yeah.
And then there's all of us crazy DIY people out there. And we just, in my case, actually, I use as close as possible as building we'll say traditional building codes
sure.
and traditional building standards as much as you can. But even that's a challenge if you're only working with 200 square feet.
Well, it's 200 square feet. And then with when you've got electrical constraints next to water.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, a lot of these things start to contradict each other.
Everything's next to everything in 200 square feet.
Yeah. I mean, oh, you can't put an outlet that's this close to water. Well, then I can't put one in the bathroom. But then code says I have to have one in there. Everything starts to kind of run across each other.
Yeah.
So real quick, I want to mention Laura. Thanks for winning the 30 seconds outdoor cleaner and being caller number 12 out there. Stay tuned for next hour. We give away one more of those. But yeah, it's really cool that I'm starting to see, at least in Oregon and even Washington, that at least the code people are starting to pay attention to that a little bit.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we were really excited when the state of Oregon recently passed what's called House Bill 2737. On one hand, it was kind of two steps forward, one step back. But I think that any discussion on the subject with any municipality, and especially at the state level, is really exciting. Our neighbors, Idaho, however, they chose not to write their own version of the tiny house code. They actually chose to just adopt the IRC code, which was kind of cool. They didn't want to reinvent the wheel. Oregon was like, I don't know about that. So they added a couple of things that we're still got to struggle through as far as the details. But again, from my perspective, any conversation on the subject is a good conversation to have. And the more education that we pass. But
yeah,
Oregon in general is considered really tiny house friendly. And Portland specifically, we were talking a couple days ago about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Idaho, and I love it over there, but only until recently did they even have licensed contractors over there.
Yeah, I know.
Those guys, and I mean, no offense, Idaho, but you guys have been kind of behind the ball. And so thank you for just keeping it easy.
Yeah, again, another building code no man's land over in Idaho.
It is. You know, I'd tell people on the radio and say, hey, make sure you get a license bonded contractor. Like, we're not gonna licenses. And it was like, oh, I can't help you with that one then. So make sure they're bonded and insured. You know, I mean, that was the tough part over there with that. But yeah, Oregon, I mean, they've got a lot of different, it took me a little while to even get my head around reading through their rules for tiny homes because it's like, oh, is this a tiny home park model? Is it not a park model? Do you need a... It was getting a little hard to read there for a while.
Yeah, and again, that's true no matter whether or not you're reading the Oregon code, the federal code, the Idaho code, the Kansas code. Mm-hmm. It's really because, and again, I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, there's you know, houses on foundations. Everybody kind of gets that, right?
Yeah, it's easy.
And then there's mobile homes, right? You got mobile homes. You got the HUD people. They control the mobile homes. Okay, I get that.
Yep.
And you got RVs, but what are tiny houses? Like, they're not all the above.
Awesome. When we come back, we're going to talk more about what a tiny home is. And we'll do that just as soon as Around the House returns.
The ending, I guess dreams don't come true. You never loved me, but I'm sorry for loving you. So tell me what you
welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. You're listening to my little buddy Jade here, who is just turned 18, and you've been hearing him on Around the House here. That kid just opened up for Chris Isaac last week at the Chateau St. Michel Winery up there. So amazing. A year ago, I was helping him get in the studio to record his first album, and he's already playing 4,500-seat venues out there. You can see more about him on Around the House with Eric G. on Facebook. Got a little bit of tease up there all the time. Well, hey, but I wanted to let you know this segment Around the House is brought to you by Adair Homes, building quality, affordable custom homes throughout the Pacific Northwest for nearly 50 years. And that's AdairHomes.com, CCB 593. They got one of those little CCB numbers. Well, MJ, welcome back to Around the House.
Thank you.
All right. We want people to call in with your tiny house questions or any other home improvement questions if you're working on it, 877-733-1011. So call with those questions. If you're thinking about a tiny home, now's the time to dive into that, 877-733-1011, and we'll have some fun. So we were kind of talking about that thought process of planning for a tiny home. So electrical is always kind of the easy part. I mean, either having the power to put there or you don't, and you got to come up with it. But when you get into the plumbing stuff, you've got water, which might not be as hard, but the plumbing, as far as the gray water and the wastewater, is probably what gets people rolled up the most. What's the best way to handle that with a tiny home?
Well, I do want to make a comment about electrical first, really, really quick. So
sure.
If you're designing or thinking about a tiny house on wheels, you want to sort of figure out, at least have an idea of where you're going to put it. Just from a perspective of, you know, if you got a 50-amp plug and you want to put it in your parents' backyard or something like that, or someone's backyard, chances are they're not going to have that big old 50-amp plug. They might have a 30-amp plug, right? That makes sense.
Yeah,
on the electrical side.
That could have been out there for the hot tub or something like that. But
right.
You're right, that 50-amp, you got to plan for that.
Yeah, exactly. So in mine, for instance, I always plan them to assume that I'm not going to have anything more. Most of them, not the new one, but most of them, I assume I'm not going to have more than 20 amps. So that means, of course, propane-powered heating appliances. So on the electrical side, you're right. The wiring itself isn't that difficult, as long as you're really clear up front kind of the decision-making process. But the plumbing, people get wrapped around the axle on that one.
Exactly. And next hour here, we're going to start diving into a really huge announcement we're going to have here. So stay tuned for that.
So exciting.
I love this thing. I'm excited about this. So when I get rolled up in excitement, I like that. So we're going to dive into that a little bit later here. And that's what my video tease was. If you're on Around the House with Eric G Facebook page, you'll see where I was kind of looking at the end of it, but couldn't walk you inside of it. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But so if you're thinking about doing that, yeah, you're right. The electrical thing is big, and designing what you're doing around that is kind of the big thing. Because if you want heated tile floors and things like that, you're not doing that with a 20 amp.
Yeah, no, not so much. Yeah,
I mean,
you're not going to run a microwave and your blow dryer and your clothes dryer at the same time.
Guaranteed.
On 20 amps.
Guaranteed.
The math just doesn't work right. So again, you know, I talk to people and I'm like, well, what do you want in it? And they want all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, the math doesn't work. You got to either give something up or then transition it over to gas appliances. And people are trepidatious. I was really trepidatious about them at first. You know, you got to learn how to be safe. You got to learn. I have professionals do all my propane systems installations, but
smart way to do it, because there's just no messing around with that.
Yeah, no. That's the thing. Like, especially like the hot water heater, the external hot water heater, that is electrical, and that is water, and that is gas, and it will kill you.
Exactly.
Like,
that is not where you start your first electrical, gas, and water project is putting in one of those units.
Absolutely.
And that's what's cool about it is that, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, but you're right. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, people aren't going to put a 100-amp service out for that thing unless you're doing something crazy on it. So you got to plan a lot ahead for these things.
Right.
And people don't take that into account, because I've heard many people, I'm going to build my own. It's like, oh, really? This will be interesting to watch. Can I grab a popcorn? Because, I mean, experienced people struggle with trying to navigate this stuff.
Yeah, it's really true. But on the plumbing side, again, you've got a lot of different options, you know. But it's, again, one of those things you got to start out and say, well, what do you want? And then you figure out, can you have that in that square footage, or where you're planning on putting it, or where you're hoping to put it, or the flexibility. Maybe you don't know where you're going to put it, so you want the maximum flexibility.
True. Maybe it's going to go here for a year or two, but where's the next year going to be, and what kind of, are you painting yourself on a corner with
exactly.
that? Where you're not going to be able to get that done.
Yeah,
right?
And that's one of the big mistakes I've heard that people make with electrical, is they put those big old 50-amp plugs on, and then the only place they can put them is RV parks.
Yeah.
So that's a consideration if that's where you want to be, or if, you know, again, if you're going to own your own land or something like that, that's
a consideration.
Easy,
because you just have, if you're going to put it on your own land out there and it's by itself, great. You just have a new service put in and you got a plug, or however you're going to do it. That's the easy part.
Yeah.
It's trying to figure out how to hook it into the backyard where you've already got 180 amps coming on the out of the box already out there.
Yeah.
And then you need to put a 40 amp breaker, and now you're putting in a new service panel, or you're diving into a whole other subject at that point.
Yeah, when I was out looking for a place to put mine, it's like, you know, I would tell everybody, and this, it's still true, I run my tiny house with a garden hose and a 110 extension cord on a 20 amp circuit. Like,
that's
I run
awesome.
My entire house. So it can be done, but you got to know, you know, again, know what the amp requirements are for all your individual appliances, and then make sacrifices. I don't have a microwave.
Nope.
Just ain't happening.
Well, yeah, but with LED lights and things these days,
you can lean
heavily on those. And that's some of the good things that are coming out with these energy efficiency standards and even some of the water efficiency standards. You can actually start to get things working a lot better where, you know, a decade ago, it was a lot more of a challenge to get that amps down because you were using electrical appliances that used a lot more power.
Yeah, I can have every single light on in the house, which is actually more than you might think. I actually have, including the two lofts in my tiny house, a whopping 384 square feet. That almost gets me kicked out of the tiny house club. So nice. I have a lot of lights, but even with all of them on, I'm actually consuming less than an amp of my full 20 amps.
See, and that's awesome. And years ago, that would have been a huge, huge issue to do that.
Yeah, pretty difficult.
You'd have been using most of those up, which is awesome. So let's go back into the, we'll dive back into the sewer question here. You know, when you're dealing with the water, that's the easier part, but when you're dealing with a tiny home, you know, the gray water and the sewage is one of the big questions.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever traveled with an RV out there and you've ever gone out with your trailer or motorhome, you got the gray water tank and you got the black water tank. How do you deal with that when you're dealing with a tiny home?
Well, we were talking about the fact that, you know, tiny homes, again, there's a lot of designations, but let's just make it really simple. There's an RV tiny home and then there's a non-RV tiny home. So RV by 8 based tiny homes, they can be built with tanks and they function just like an RV.
Gotcha.
You have the choice of whether or not you want to have those chemical toilets or whether or not you want to have a composting separating toilet and those sorts of things. By far, most of the tiny houses actually do choose to go with a composting toilet. And basically what that does is now, again, what you're doing is you're normally dealing with a gray water. So gray water, you know, again, for definition, that's your dishwashing, that is your laundry, and then your shower, right? So if you're using 100% biodegradable, plant-based, you know, some really, really safe soaps and cleansers and so forth, anything that you're putting into a gray water treatment system is going to be relatively low impact on the environment, right?
Yeah.
So gray water is a lot easier to sort of deal with. The black water, of course, is sewage, right?
Yep. Now your septic tank land if you're not careful.
Exactly. So, I mean, of course, if you can, if you want to, if you've got the money, if you've got the spot, absolutely plummet for sewage because it's way easier. Let me tell you what. I mean, I don't know how irresponsible you think it is, but flushing that toilet and having it just go away is just awesome. But
it is.
In my house, it's just not the way it works.
I've seen people that have sat there before and they've used the gray water tank with an RV before, but they couldn't get into the system. And then they put into that little cart and roll it over and put it into the sewage system and do that every week. And I'm like, no, that's way too much work.
Exactly. No way. Yeah.
So, all right. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about this because I got some more questions and we're going to talk tiny homes just as soon as Around the House returns.
Like the devil, there was something burning deep inside of me. Ran into the Puerto Ricans. These girls took us to the fort house where we played alone.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. We're having a good time in here. This is the song that I think that Ace Hardware stole their little theme song from. We're talking tiny homes today. We're having a good time. Are we going to be enjoying this last segment here because we're going to wrap up kind of the design section of tiny homes. And then next hour, we're going to have a good time talking about a little surprise we've got for you all. So, MJ, welcome back here to Around the House so we can talk tiny homes.
Thank you.
All right. So, we want to get your calls here to 877-733-1011. I know we're talking about something fairly interesting here with tiny homes and answering a bunch of questions that maybe people don't have answers to, but if you got questions, give us a call at 877-733-1011. Also, ATH@KXL.com is where you can email me with your questions as well if you're a little shy. And then make sure you follow us on iTunes, SoundCloud, all those different things. And when in doubt, just go to AroundTheHouseOnline.com because we've got my Morgan Day Oregon segments there. I've got the links to the podcast. That's kind of home base for all that stuff. So that's a great place to go, as well as when you go into our Facebook page, we have a little closed group in there called Around the House Nation. Dive into that and subscribe to that because people are putting up their projects there all the time. And Dean and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago. We had a great time with this that it was somebody was one of our great listeners out there was talking about a concrete block wall. And what I loved about that in that little closed group we've got is that the architect that designed the Intrepid Air and Space Museum in Manhattan was on there telling him how to reuse these block walls in his backyard for these CMU concrete blocks. So that's just kind of some of the fun stuff on there that we get with people commenting. So it's a fun little closed group. Well, hey, let's talk about designing and what to take into consideration when we dive into tiny homes, because you only have a box that's so big.
Right. Yeah.
And you got to jam it all in there.
Yeah.
So what's your thought process when you kind of go through starting to plan out a tiny home?
Well, again, it's really all about talking. One thing that people love about tiny houses, they are really as unique as our fingerprints, right? It's like all about what you want to do. So the first thing you have to decide is where you want to take it and how far you want to move it. Really, that's number one.
Yeah.
So the Department of Transportation, you know, they sort of make some rules.
They kind of do.
Yeah, exactly. They kind of do before we take these things down the road. So, you know, if you think you're going to move it and you don't want to ask anybody's permission and you don't want to get a CDL or you don't want to get a wide load permit or anything like that, you got to stay within 8.5 feet wide. And that's a challenge. And you also got to stay within 13.5 feet tall. So those are sort of, that's a
otherwise,
really.
Otherwise, anything over 13.5 feet tall, when you get up to those traffic lights, overpasses, tunnels, bridges, you have now filleted the top of that thing.
Exactly.
You don't have tiny house drama. Yeah, if you want to see what that looks like, go to YouTube and just type in trucks hitting bridges and you can have 10 hours of fun watching people not read low ceiling type discussions there on the signs.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing, you know, is sort of like, you know, how often do you want to move it? Because if you're just going to pay a professional to come move it every year, every couple of years, something like that, you probably want a little bit bigger one, right? A little bit heavier, a little bit bigger, something that you're not necessarily going to hook up your one ton and take it, you know, take it down the road. There are a few people that actually do that. They travel around, you know, they travel around the country, 13, 14,000 pound tiny houses, but for the most part, they don't move too often. So that's definitely the first consideration.
Yeah. If you want to be able to back your truck up or call Terry Emmert over to Emmert International to move it. You know, that's the kind of the difference there of are you hiring a house mover? You're going to put it on the back of your big SUV or truck and haul that thing around.
Yeah, exactly. So that's definitely first, you know, how often you want to move it. The second thing I think is probably lofts or no lofts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to climb stairs? Do you want to climb a ladder? Are you, you know, that's kind of like the next biggie. And originally when tiny houses started coming out, you know, again, the two-year-old ones, everybody had ladders. And then pretty soon people started getting really creative stairs to get in lofts. And now one of the big trends, I think primarily due to the interest of the baby boomers, is main floor, you know, single story units. And again, who would have thunk you could fit that much in 200 square feet?
Well, and then ladders sometimes run into other building code problems because ladders are not a approved staircase in many things, that they don't like ladders to get up into, like, sleeping lofts, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. I made reference earlier to House Bill 2737. That was one of the things that they had addressed in that. You know, it's using sleeping lofts as bedrooms. What is that egress requirement? Because when you're looking at the rise and run and all that tread calculation, we're going back to math again.
I know.
It doesn't work in a small space.
No, because you're using up the entire length, which is going to be a 3-foot wide staircase if you follow building code down the middle of an 8-foot to get to a loft. That loft all of a sudden makes zero sense if you had to follow that.
Yeah, exactly. If being the key word there, if you got to follow that building code.
So that's kind of some of the challenges there that you run into with that. And to me, I mean, the other way to do that would be you'd have to do almost an exterior staircase that could bolt and unbolt that you'd have to haul separately. But that would be a whole other kind of way to do that. And who wants to go outside to go to sleep anyway?
Well, I totally agree with you. I have seen a couple of houses that actually do that. Matter of fact, I have a house that's actually being built right now. But my exterior staircase goes to my rooftop deck.
There we go. Now you're talking, a little party thing on top.
Absolutely.
We come back. We'll be taking all your calls just as soon as Around the House returns.
Hey, it's Eric G from Around the House. quick favor. If you're enjoying the show, the absolute best way you can support us is by leaving a quick review on your favorite podcast player. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you're listening to. It literally takes 30 seconds, and here's why it matters so much to us. Those reviews help new listeners discover the podcast. Tell the algorithms we're worth recommending and give us the feedback we need to bring you even better episodes. More of the topics you love and guests that actually move the needle for you. That helps us help you. It's as simple as that. So if the show's been useful, funny, or just made your day a little better, pop over right now, drop a star rating and a couple of sentences. We'll be genuinely grateful. Thanks for being a part of the Around the House crew, and let's keep that conversation going.